But I'm going to tell you, the more people that I talk to, the more it sounds like this is not going to be a 30-team operation. They are not going to bring everybody back. It's going to be something less than that. What it's going to be, check back next hour, check back the hour after that. That's what's being discussed.
Those 30 teams in question, they make up the National Basketball Association. It's unclear how many of them will come back to finish the stalled season. But what is clear is that it seems more likely than ever that the NBA will indeed come back. As the players and league move in lockstep towards a plan, we look inside the private negotiations shaping that return and ask which teams and players might come out on top. I'm Ina Kimes. It's Wednesday, May 27th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Marathon. So, Ramona, you talk with a lot of folks around the league on both sides. What is the optimism level right now?
I think the optimism level is as high as I have heard it. We're at that stage where everybody can see the path forward. It's just kind of about the details now.
Ramona Shelburne is a senior NBA writer for ESPN.
Everyone involved wants there to be a deal. Everybody involved wants this to happen. But I think everybody involved knows that you're going to have a best case scenario, you're going to have a plan, and then you're going to have to adjust to whatever comes up as you try to execute that plan. Because the one thing I think we've all learned during this time, Mina, is that you really can't count on anything to go off exactly as you plan it.
It seems like part of the reason there haven't been pitfalls is because, as you outlined in your latest story, the players in the league seem to be moving in lockstep. There's a joint task force. Michelle Roberts, the head of the union, even told you there doesn't need to be a vote, which surprised me.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by that, too. I think it's a really big difference in the NBA because they have been talking this entire time. Like, there hasn't been one proposal, talk amongst yourselves and keep your cards close to the vest about what you're really going after. This joint task force has been meeting and talking the whole time. And I think a couple of weeks ago, one of the key things was that Adam Silver joined a call with all the players union, with every player who wanted to join that conference call, and answered their questions, you know, over the course of an hour and a half phone call, where it let the players know that what the union had been telling them was the same thing that the league is telling the union. In other words, there's not, you know, one side that's operating in a certain way and you can't really trust what they're saying. And I think that level of trust that's been established between the league and the players is really what's pushing this opportunity to resume play forward so quickly.
So what's the next step in all this?
The big day is Friday. There's a sense that after Friday's Board of Governors meeting, the league will have put into place its best idea of how we're going to restart the league, what the timeline's going to be, and then you loop in the players and say, how do you guys feel about this? I think by the end of this week, we should have a pretty good idea of where things stand and how we're going to move forward.
So let's talk about what that might look like. Mm-hmm. Last Thursday, the GMs met, or Zoomed, presumably, and they were given a survey on some of the options for what a renewed season or playoff might look like. What were the different choices presented?
Well, I think the biggest question is, do you feel good about the single site, right? You know, we've reported that the NBA, and they've confirmed on the record, which I thought was a pretty big step to go on the record and confirm discussions with the Disney Corporation, that you would have a resumption of the season at a sort of a campus-like atmosphere. I love how the term bubble has been transformed into campus. that's some good wording, but words matter. And I bring that up for a reason, because initially, when you brought up the idea of a bubble, the reaction amongst players was very visceral. It was like, whoa, how are we going to enforce this? I'm not wearing an ankle bracelet. Like, I don't want to have armed guards outside the hotel. Like, I'm not being put in jail so that I can play, right? I think once they understood, no, the bubble's not really a bubble. It's more like a campus at a nice resort in Orlando where you can play golf, you can go to restaurants, you can walk amongst the 228 acres out in Orlando, and maybe in your free time you can go watch some other games even. Like, okay, your team's done playing and I'll just watch my buddy Chris Paul and the Oklahoma City Thunder play. Then the other question is, do you have 30 teams resume play or do you have 16 teams resume play or something in between? 30 teams is 30 teams times, let's say, 35 players and coaches and staffers for each team. That's a fair amount of people. 16 teams is almost half of that, right? And each less person, each less team that's there is less exposure, is less risk. And it would make a lot more sense to just say, all right, this is where the 16 teams fell on March 11th when we stopped the season. There's like a 3.5 game gap between the 8 seed and the 9 seed in each conference. It's not like somebody's half a game back and it's really close. Like, there really were 8 pretty clearly defined teams in each conference. And it's the most fair and it makes the most sense to just say, these are the 8 teams. Thank you for being willing to participate, everybody else, but we'll see you in December whenever we try to restart the next season. And that probably makes the most sense if you're thinking purely in terms of science. However, this isn't just a scientific decision. You have to consider the revenues that are being lost, and you also have to consider the absolutely terrible idea of asking NBA players to resume a season after a 3 to 4 month layoff by the time we all finish this up. Even if you have a training camp, these guys are going to be rusty. To go straight from that to meaningful playoff games, nobody wants to see that. And I think that's why you're going to see something like a playoffs plus format.
So if we're looking at the difference between, say, going straight to just 16 teams versus the playoffs plus option you mentioned, where there might be a bit of a play-in for some of those seeds, what do you think the likelihood is and sort of the divided interests on choosing between those two options?
I think that the GMs that are surveyed, that pretty much anyone I talk to in the league, doesn't really like this idea of the play-in tournament because it's pretty unfair to the 7 and 8 seeds right now. Why should a team that was 3 or 4 games back get a realistic chance of passing them in the standings and taking their playoff spot just because we can't finish out the regular season all the way? It doesn't feel right for Dallas to give Portland or New Orleans or whoever you want, or Sacramento, a chance to make up 3.5-4 games in the standings when they probably wouldn't have been able to do it with the remaining 17 games in the schedule, right? Why is that fair? And plus, let's talk about Dallas. Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis are overseas. Like, this is not going to be an easy restart for the Mavericks. Like, Doncic has to fly back from Slovenia. Then they have to have a training camp. They got to get all ramped up again. And who's to say what's going to happen in those 5 games? Yeah. Those are extremely meaningful games that you're going to have to play right off the bat.
So it does sound like, while the players and the league have been kumbaya on all of this, at least compared to other sports, someone's going to be mad. Whatever format they come up with, there's going to be a couple of mad teams at least.
Yeah. This is the other part we have to always caution is, what kind of setbacks are we going to have? I think you have to assume, based on what you've seen happen in other sports that have restarted, most notably the Bundesliga, where you've had just lots of players just will test positive. Like, you'll be 2 weeks from restarting, you'll have 3 guys on one team test positive. What do you do? Do we push pause for another week while they quarantine? Do we keep on going and just say, you guys catch up when you're back? I think you have to build in some time. And you and I, when we do these podcasts, I like to make traffic analogies, right?
So LA.
You know, generally speaking, in Los Angeles, you have to leave, I would say, a half hour longer than what you really think the traffic is going to be, right? So from my house to downtown, I usually say, I should leave an hour. It actually only takes me 40 minutes, but I should leave probably an hour if I want to be safe because I know there's going to be traffic or something's going to go wrong. If I don't leave that full hour, then I think it's my fault, right? But if I leave the full hour and then there's traffic and I'm still late, then I can blame the traffic, right? Mm. So I think that's the right analogy when you think about the NBA restarting. Like, let's just say late July, but we're kind of building in 2 to 4 weeks of like something's going to happen that's going to slow us down. And if it's longer than that, we can feel bad about it. But if it's within that cushion that we've already kind of decided is probably going to happen, you know, you just kind of assume that we're going to have some setbacks here. So that's another reason why I think the extra play-in tournament,
right,
like that's the buffer zone that you could say, yeah, it's a nice idea, but if anything goes wrong, let's just forget about that.
You mentioned the possibility of a player testing positive. There's been a lot of scrutiny on NBA teams and players getting tested when the general public wasn't up to speed. Where are they now in terms of, you know, balancing those concerns to execute a plan that'll enable them to even get this going in the first place?
They're going to be testing people every day, Mina. They're going to have testing where every single day at some point you're going to be tested and the results will either take a few hours or maybe even overnight to come back. In between, you're going to get temperature checks and sort of wellness checks. People within that bubble are going to test positive because it's not an impermeable bubble. Like, there's not a world in which you can do this where there's going to be zero risk. I think everybody has accepted that. The real worry and fear that everybody has is it's not just the one isolated case. It's an outbreak. It's 4 guys on one team, 3 over on another team, 2 on another team. That's when nobody quite knows and has a great answer yet of what would happen.
All right, after the break, let's talk next steps and why the NBA is so driven to come back. Hi guys. Given everything that is happening in the world right now, most of us are buying things online. I saw that AT&T started doing 2 really helpful things for those who want to buy a new phone or device online. They are offering fast, free, non-contact delivery and curbside pickup so that online shopping is as simple and safe as possible. On top of that, they have a flexible return policy so you can shop at ease. You can visit att.com to learn how to shop online from the safety of your home 24/7. Subject to change, restrictions apply. Ramona, we've been talking about the plan. I want to ask, aside from Adam Silver on the league side and Michelle Roberts representing the players, who else have been sort of the key figures in making this happen?
Well, and this is the part where you and I work for the Walt Disney Company. And I think that we should all acknowledge that, right? That's the label that pays me, right? The label that pays you. And Disney's also the label that pays the NBA because they have the broadcast rights at ESPN and ABC to the league. So they pay money as part of a $9 billion broadcast deal that the NBA has with ESPN and Turner Sports. And the Walt Disney Company, particularly Bob Iger, happens to be really close friends with Chris Paul and a mentor and confidant of Adam Silver. Oh, and we just so happen to have this 220-acre resort in Orlando that has 3 arenas and 24,000 hotel rooms and golf courses and restaurants that would provide the ideal campus-like atmosphere for the NBA or any league that would like to resume its play. It's allowed the negotiations to happen both on a broad scale with this joint task force that's been meeting, but it's also happening one-to-one. Chris Paul and Bob Iger are just on the phone together. Bob Iger is on the phone with Adam Silver, and he's able to make that deal with both of them and really get them to a place of trust and understanding by himself. they involve everybody else. Yes, there are committees and there are lawyers and health and safety experts involved in this. But when it comes down to, do I look you in the eye on Zoom, I suppose, or FaceTime, whatever they're using, and do I trust you? And so I think the idea that you have this triangle of trust, I'll just coin it that term.
Triangle of trust.
Yeah, there it is. That's really facilitated this entire process. It helps to work with your broadcast partner who also happens to own the parks and facilities where you can just fairly easily produce this broadcast.
Ramon, I asked why the NBA was so driven to come back, but it's a silly question because we all know the answer, money. It's why the league wants to come back. It's why the broadcasters, including us, want to come back. It's why the players want to come back. If there's no basketball, how much money will be lost?
Yeah, this year, you're going to lose a ton of money anyway, right? Because you're losing all the gate at all the games that you're not having. And there's also the issue of local TV revenue. Most local TV contracts call for the team to play at least 70 games. Well, we're about 5 to 7 games short of the 70 games. That's the other added revenue that players would like to fulfill on their contractual obligations. Nobody's worried about the national TV debt of regular season games. It's much more concerning with local TV revenues because that goes directly to each team and they feel the burden themselves. But I think what's more important is like the future of the league, right? Other sports are finding a way back. You don't want to be the one major sports league that can't figure it out, can't play, and now you're no longer in the headlines for your games. You're in the headlines for why couldn't these guys get it together?
Let's say there is a season or a playoffs or playoffs plus, and there's still, as you said, some financial losses. What would that mean for the cap next year?
Oh, gosh. It's hard to even wrap your head around it, to be honest. A couple of years ago, we had the opposite of this where the TV revenue came in. It was like a $9 billion TV deal. And we had what was called the spike. And the spike allowed the Golden State Warriors, it was a $20 million spike in the salary cap. It just went up from one year to the next because of the increased TV revenue from the broadcast contract, but also some other overseas revenue, their expansion into China, into India, that was really bringing in a lot of money. And that $20 million that everybody got led to some really big contracts. And so if the overall pie gets smaller, then what you have left to spend on player salaries is smaller. And if anything, it could even go down. It will not be great for player movement. It will not be good for free agency. It will not be good for roster construction. There's a lot of sticky issues. And I think what you're going to see, and this is kind of a sad reality, Mina, is you're going to see staffing levels at organizations go down. All the best and brightest minds that have flocked to the NBA to work in player health and wellness, into performance and analytics, I think a lot of these people will end up getting laid off. I think the staffing levels will contract because those are contracts you can get out of.
So, Ramona, we've discussed, obviously there are financial incentives for teams and players to want to see this through. But there are also basketball incentives, especially for some teams. You are in Los Angeles. You cover the Lakers. You got to think LeBron James and his teammates are extra motivated to make this happen, given the fact that they had the number one seed and his age, and it just seems to be their season.
Yeah, and I think how important it is that the star players in this league have pushed forward the idea of resuming the season. If LeBron James is not on the best team in the league, if Kawhi Leonard, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Russell Westbrook, Chris Paul, they're all on playoff teams. They're all on teams that want to be back, that want to see what happens with the rest of this season. And they all happen to have very loud voices and a lot of pull in the players union amongst their peers and in the league. And there was a call 3 or 4 weeks ago at this point between those players. It was organized by Chris Paul, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Russell Westbrook, and it included guys like Damian Lillard and Steph Curry, who were on non-playoff teams at this point. And it was the main substance of the call was essentially, we all have to get on the same page. We all have to push the same agenda and be aligned in our thinking and our motivation. And they all are really united in saying, we want to finish out the season. Let's crown a champion. Let's have the playoffs. It's going to be weird. I mean, these playoffs, like, what happened to the concept of home field advantage, home court advantage here? Okay. The Lakers and the Bucks, if you're looking at this going, man, we were going to have home court throughout the playoffs. If you go to any of the Laker Clipper games and you see the composition of the fans, even for the Clipper home games, there's a lot of Laker fans there. And if that was the Western Conference Finals, that was a huge advantage for the Lakers. They get to stay home for all seven games. And then the home games that the Clippers have, there's a ton of their fans there. Well, that advantage is gone.
I do love the idea of other players just sitting in the stands and trolling them.
That's so awesome, right? And you'll hear it too, because there won't be a lot of noise. So yes. If you're trash talking from the stands, I mean, you're going to hear that. It's going to be fun. I think in the case of some of the best players and the most recognizable stars in this league, there's a lot to play for beyond money. At their core, they just want to play. There's a championship to go win. And you'll see, as soon as we get going, I think that's going to move right back to the forefront. And I will be so happy to talk about real basketball again and all of those ramifications. Man, I'm so into the battle for LA, which will be happening in Orlando, apparently.
Thanks so much, Ramona.
You're welcome, Mina.
Coming up, as the NBA inches forward, the NHL advances with a plan.
We're presented by Marathon. Now, more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. And Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high-quality, top-tier gas. While we are aware travel might not be top of mind, there might be times where you have to hop in the car to run an errand. Maybe you have to drop off groceries and supplies to your family. Maybe you've become an amazing baker and want to drop off a few dozen cookies on your best friend's porch. Or maybe you just want to drive around to all of your friends' homes simply to wave from a safe distance. But before you head out, remember to fuel up at Marathon. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and reducing emissions. Remember, wherever you need to go, the people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
Here's another story I want you to know. You just heard Ramona Shelburne talk about how the NBA is nearing a return. Now it appears that the NHL is on a similar path. Commissioner Gary Bettman announced the league has indeed come up with their own plan.
I am delighted to be with you today to announce the National Hockey League's plans for our resumption of play, the format of the 2020 Stanley Cup playoffs, and how we will conduct the 2020 NHL draft lottery.
Here are the details. According to Bettman, the regular season is over and 24 teams will keep playing. The top 12 teams in each conference will be determined by how well they were doing at the time of the pause. Of those teams, the top 8 will play each other to determine seeding, while the other 16 play a qualifying round for 8 playoff spots. After that, the first round begins. They'll be playing in 2 hub cities, the Eastern Conference teams in one city and Western Conference teams in another. While Bettman didn't announce any specific dates for when the tournament will begin, he stressed the importance of following health and safety protocols set by local and state governments. Training camps won't open until July 1st at the earliest. He also delivered another piece of news. With the season coming to a stop, there were questions about how to handle the draft lottery. Now we have answers. The draft will begin on June 26th. And the lottery will include the 7 teams that didn't qualify for the 24-team playoff, as well as the 8 teams eliminated in the qualifying round. So while your squad might not have a shot at the cup this year, you can take some cold comfort, perhaps the only kind in hockey, in that piece of news.
I'm Ina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.